This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and it's actually 20-some-odd degrees. Whoop, whoop! Glory! This has been quite the week. Whew! I know it hasn't been quite the week for people who live in Minot, but for people who live in Springfield, Missouri, this has been quite the week. We actually, one night this week out at our house, I looked at the little cameras I'm waving to somebody who's crossing the street here. Looked at the little cameras, and one of my cameras said, minus 20. That's Fahrenheit. It's Fahrenheit. Minus 20 is cold for Springfield, Missouri. That's unusual. They were projecting minus 11, minus 12, somewhere in there. And one of my other cameras said minus 14, I think. So, I mean, it was cold for multiple days in a row. In fact, it was cold enough that our neighbor, who has a modern house, you know, with buried pipes and all that stuff, he completely lost water. So we're figuring that it probably froze up someplace near the well because he lost it to his outbuildings and he just lost it everywhere. So I think it was Tuesday night or Wednesday, I can't remember what. He didn't have any water for his horses, and so we grabbed a trough and hauled it over to his north fence, because that's closest to our little rock house, and got a hose and got him hooked up to the little rock house with water so he could water his horses. And we lost the hot water side of the kitchen sink in the little rock house for a while. But then yesterday, finally, I mean, we were down bouncing in the single digits in the highs, and then, you know, -8, -5 in the evenings, and the ground was so cold. But then yesterday, finally, it started warming up, got the ground warmed up, and we got back the hot water line. Nothing seems to be broken. He said he got back his water, so whoop, whoop, you know. So it was a little exciting there for a while. I have a little story to tell about this morning, because this just tickles me. I mean, it really just tickles me. So this morning I'm supposed to have breakfast with a friend at a little cafe that opens up at 6. Not many places in Springfield open up at 6, but this little cafe, it's just a little hole in the wall cafe, opens up at 6. So,
I've been having breakfast there with a buddy once a month.
And so told him, okay, heading that direction. So I'm almost there. It's like, you know, just almost there. And he texts me and he says, well, the cafe is not open. And he said, it doesn't look like they're going to open anytime soon. Okay, well, it's been really cold. And okay, that's understandable. Maybe water broke or something, you know, so pipe broke and yada, yada, yada. So maybe they're waiting to fix it because the plumbers are just overloaded right now, obviously. So I said, well, that's fine. I said, you want to just go find a, you know, big hotel somewhere and we'll just sit in the lobby and talk. And so we said, yeah, we'll do that. So there's a hotel here called University Plaza Hotel. And so we were just going to go down and sit there. I'm driving down the road and I noticed that Jimmy John's, the sub sandwich place, all the lights are on in Jimmy John's. All the neon is on. There's two signs, not one, two signs that say open, big signs. They say open. Okay, it's 6:10 in the morning. This seems a little unusual, but okay. Maybe this is new. So, and it's right down there by the university, Missouri State University. No, it's called, it used to be called Missouri State University. That's what it's called. It used to be called SMSU. Now it's just MSU. So I figure, well, maybe they, you know. So I call my buddy back and said, hey, Jimmy John's looks like it's open.
And so we park our cars, tramp across the road, tramp across the snow-covered sidewalks, and grab the door and pull it open. Look, the door's open. I'm like, and the guy inside kind of looks up at me when I walk in, and I say, "Wow, we're really, you know, we're surprised you're open." And he looks at me and goes, "No." "Oh, okay. Well, thanks." "My bad." It's not like you have two sides of the window that say open and all of your lights are on. But apparently he's probably in there making bread or something like that. And your front door is open. So so anyways, I have chortled over that all day today. So all is well. All is well. We have made it through the cold snap. All is well. I am so happy. Yeah. Because it's warmer now. It's going to be, and then it's just going to be climbing out of the weekend. So, you know, we're going to be up in the 40s and 50s soon.
Yay!
So anyways, writing is good. I'm finishing up. I don't think I'm over the line on this chapters to finish this up. It's not quite finishing up where I thought I was going to finish up. There's a final story on the end that I'm sure it'll be fine. It's for a good cause. So the book's coming along well. I'm on chapter 32, which I expect to finish chapter 32 before the weekend is up. And I expect to finish chapter 33, which is the last news feed chapter at the end of the book. And once that one's done, then I just have epilogue left. Have a whole week to do epilogue. I don't think that's going to be too much of a problem. I think I know where I am on the epilogue. And then I'll have this book wrapped up. And then we'll start the editing process and try to figure out what in the world we're going to do for cover for Nursery Rhyme and like that and like that. But you know what? Jesus has been good. Jesus has been good all the way through this. I'm not really fretting that. When it gets to be time where I'm supposed to know what it is, I'll know what it is. And we'll move forward. It's interesting because this last little bit, the reason this last little bit is on here, One Final Encounter, is because the chapters weren't quite going to fall right. I like my chapters to be about 12 to 16 pages apiece, and I just didn't have enough to finish out chapter 30, so I got started on something that took me to chapter 30, 16 pages, so then it was time to break, so that means I need a chapter 32, but I'm going into more depth than I thought I was going to go in for this story, and it's fine, it's good, it serves the purpose, but, you know, there's always things that I just have no idea of are going to be in the book, and then they end up in the book, because that's the way creativity goes. If you just relax and move forward, stuff shows up. So, anyways, it's good. It'll be fun. Costumes are fine. We did Steampunk Cupid last week in celebration of Valentine's Day. People seem to enjoy that. It is the first time that I have looped around. Last year was the Valentine's Day was the first time that I did the three videos. Really, the first time I recorded videos in costume. So we're back around. So I didn't do the bit because I had already done the bit. And I didn't do making of because I had already done making of. So I just did a reactions video. This week will be the same way. The next week will be the same way. And then I'll have a new costume for the first weekend in March. And that's dress in blue or wear something blue. I don't know. It's for colon cancer. I don't know why I picked blue as the color for colon cancer, but you know, that's okay. But it's going to be Cookie Monster, so it will be fun. So I have ordered just today a poop emoji plushie that I'm going to take with me that apparently when you squeeze it, it makes farting noises. So, you know, these are the kind of highbrow humor that we go for. Yeah. Anyway, so costumes are good. I'm starting the National Button Week costume. I just have a few little quick things to do to finish up this Wear Blue Day costume. Just have to attach some elastic straps here and there and blah, blah, blah. I'll get that done. And then we'll have that done. And then, you know, I'm moving on to the Button Day costume. And then once I get the Button Day costume done, I'll move forward to the Talk Like Shakespeare costume. This one, the Talk Like Shakespeare costume, is going to be ridiculous. It's going to be ridiculous. I'm still talking to my wife about that one. But one of the interesting things about all of this is that I have found that the more ridiculous the costume, the more delighted women seem to be. And so, you know, that really does make it worth doing. It just makes it worth doing. So one moment, I'm getting my mail. It looks like we may actually have mail. We haven't had mail delivery the last couple of days because it's been so cold. Yeah, there's something in there. So let's see, that one is not for me. And nothing down there, really? Well, okay. I was hoping to get magnets. Oh, come on now. Maybe we'll just back up. So, and maybe we'll just go in again and run over it. Mat it down a little bit. There we go. Okay. Okay. So that would have been sad if I had gotten stuck. That would have been very sad. And, would have had to find a way to get unstuck, but I did not get stuck. Yay. That's my traction control kicking in there when you hear that. So in addition to all the cold, we had, I think, an accumulation total of, 7 inches or so, 7-8 inches, which is just enough. If you get it in the wrong spot, you know, it'll hang you up, but so far so good. All is well. So anyways, this week I did come across an article that is, it's one of those articles that you read and you hear people's explanations in the article, and I think, yeah, I don't think that's quite right, because of course I have a framework that explains everything, because to the man with a hammer, all the world is a nail. And so we're going to chalk that up. Chalk that up to this thing. The name of the article was Psychological Reactants, : Why We Sabotage Our Own Goals. All right. So the subtitle is How One of the Most Underrated, Unappreciated Concepts in Psychology is Holding You Back. So this is by a man named Nir Eyal, maybe. So he starts off the article saying, when researchers make a joke in the title of an academic paper, you know what's inside is going to be good. Here's the title I'm referencing. Double quote. A 50-year-old review of psychological reactants theory, : do not read this article. Okay, quote. He said, how did you feel when you read the phrase, do not read this article? If you thought, well, now I'm definitely going to read the article. Then you got the joke and experienced the phenomenon described in the paper, psychological reactants. Psychological reaction is our knee-jerk negative reaction to being told what to do. Now, keep in mind that phrase. Knee-jerk negative reaction to being told what to do. It's when you were a teenager and your mom told you to put your jacket on before going out, you'd probably not put on your jacket just cause. Only later did you realize that you should have taken your mom's advice as you hear your teeth chattering in the cold. It's the reason you bristle when your manager asks you to do a task and you grumble to yourself about being micromanaged. Later you realize the task was critical to winning that big project and you promoting your career. According to researchers, almost everyone has this mental reflex against being told what to do. It kicks in whenever we feel that our freedom or autonomy is being threatened. Okay, that's their explanation for it. We often do things against our best interest because we want to protect our freedom to behave the way we want. And that's an explanation that they're giving for it. Psychological reactance isn't inherently bad. Now they're having to justify their explanation for it. If people are too compliant, they're vulnerable to manipulations. But psychological reactance can at times prevent us from doing things that we should do. Sometimes even things we want to do, like be helpful to others. So recently, the author said, I was clearing the dishes from the dinner table. I asked my daughter if she could wash the dishes. Quote, I was going to do it, Dad, she said, but now that you ask me, I don't want to do it anymore. Ah, psychological reactance strikes again. I should have known better. Okay. So they said psychological reactance can sabotage you in bizarre, even ironic ways. For example, the knee-jerk impulse of don't tell me what to do can kick in even when it's telling you, even when it's you telling yourself what to do. This is particularly common when you're trying to make commitments and follow through on them by building a schedule, a technique I recommend in my book, Indistractable. You may have scheduled time for something that you legitimately wanted to do, say working out or reading a nonfiction book, but when it comes time to start scheduling exercise or sit down to read per your schedule, you may feel a bit of reactance. Even though you yourself are the one who is telling you what to do, you may still react against being told what to do. Crazy, right? Yes, it is crazy. Yes, it is. This occurs because at the moment, it doesn't feel like you telling yourself what to do. Another way to put that is, at the moment, it doesn't feel like someone else is telling you you don't want to listen to what you're trying to tell yourself. Rather, it's you from the past when you made your schedule telling yourself what to do right now. Or it's you in the present trying to sabotage yourself in the past. Psychology tells us this paradox is why we're often hypocrites, saying we'll do something, but when the time comes, we don't. Now that you understand the power of psychological reactance, you have the power to recognize it and disarm it. Instead of flaking on commitments because of a knee-jerk feeling, you can change your perspective on the situation. To disarm psychological reactance, you need to change the way you talk to yourself. Instead of thinking you have to do something, tell yourself you get to do it. By changing the dialogue, you empower yourself. Okay, this is pretty close. Now you're in charge. You're not being told what to do. You're choosing to make time for something that matters to you. Your freedom isn't being threatened. It's being exercised. That's close too. Disarming psychological reactance takes practice, but it's worth learning how to deal with this uncomfortable feeling that all too often leads us off track. Try changing the way you deal with reactance, and then whatever you do, don't share this article. So, cute at the end. Here's the problem with all these explanations of, well, I don't want to be told what to do. Okay, so being told what to do is not inherently bad. Always exercising your freedom is not inherently good. It varies with every single situation. My interpretation with psychological reactance is what's actually happening is that's the flesh and it's telling you some sort of lie. Notice how they describe psychological reactance. It is our knee-jerk negative reaction to being told what to do. This is a response that we would expect from 12-year-old children. Because 12-year-old children, 12 or 13-year-old children, often have knee-jerk negative reactions. That's how you tell something is from the flesh. One of the ways is that if you're saying what you're saying sounds like a 12-year-old, that's probably the flesh. And the important thing to remember with the flesh is that the flesh is always lying to you. That's how it gets a reaction. So for instance, if you had an article and it was named a 50-year-old review of psychological reactance theory, do not read this article. the flesh is going to say, well, who are they to tell me who to raise? They can't tell you what to do. That you need to be able to do whatever you want when you want to do it. No, that's not really true. There are many constraints that we have on our lives. And some are constraints that we need to push against. Some are constraints that we just need to say, you know, that's a good constraint to have on my life. But you can't figure out which is which if you're all boiling up with emotion because you're listening to the flesh lie to you. Okay, so he talks about if you bristle when your manager asks you to do a task and you grumble to yourself about being micromanaged. So who's telling you you're being micromanaged? It's your flesh that's telling you you're being micromanaged. Because it's picking up something that's perfectly legitimate. Your manager wanting you to do something. He's your manager. That's his prerogative or her prerogative. So your manager simply telling you to do something is not the same as being micromanaged. And yet, immediately what happens, you start quote-unquote grumbling to yourself about being micromanaged. Okay, that's a lie. You're not being micromanaged. And if you accept the lie and sit there and grumble to yourself, now you're wasting time. You're just wasting time. Or your response could be, I'm not being micromanaged. He simply had something he needed done. I'm going to do it. Now, if there are this huge other stack that he had given me that needed to be done on a deadline, then the response is, yes, sir, I understand this is important. I do have these other 5 tasks that I'm working on right now. Which of those tasks, do I just need to delay all of those while I do this other one? Or would you like me to go ahead and finish up those before I get to this other one? Okay, there's no emotion there. There's no negative knee-jerk response. It's simply saying, okay, I do have these 5 things over here that I'm trying to get done because you had indicated those were very important. Please help me to understand which is more important. And then you just go on and you do the next thing. Okay, if you understand the flesh is the one that's grinding these things up and causing you to have these reactions, and you understand that the flesh is constantly lying to you, then what you can do is you can get some truth in there. And once you get truth in there, that quote-unquote knee-jerk reaction, it'll just disappear. I schedule a lot of stuff in my life. Everything has to be scheduled because I've got so much stuff going on. When it comes time to actually do something, certainly the flesh will go, oh, I can't believe we have to do that. And I just say, you know what? This is the schedule. We need to get this done because that's going to happen and this is going to happen. And it's actually, this is time to work on it. And thank God I have time to work on this. And then I just sit down and do it. Because I don't waste a lot of time listening to that silliness inside my head that's grousing and complaining and grumbling. Because all of that is ridiculous. We have so much time in the world, we got to get it done. That's the truth of it. So when they start talking about this, the spot where he talks about by changing the dialogue, you empower yourself. That's absolutely true. Except my method of changing the dialogue is not by trying to convince yourself and turn the lie someplace else. My method is to say, recognize that the first proposition is a lie. It's not your past self that is trying to boss you around. Your past self did a good thing by getting organized so you can get done all the things you need to do. And so if my past self did that and took the time to do that, then obviously I'm going to honor that so that I don't just waste that time I spent in planning. Because if you plan everything out and then you don't execute the plan, well, you've just wasted all that time planning. And that's the truth of it. Because planning assists you. to get things done. So, you know, whenever you feel this inside you, just remember, it's always flesh. It's always flesh. And it's always lying to you in some way. I was just talking to a friend this morning about this, and we were talking about worry in the future, worrying about the future. How is that a lie? Well, it's a lie because A, you either believe that there is no God, or B, you believe that there is a God who doesn't know the future, or C, there is a God who knows the future but doesn't care about you and so will not pave the path before you to the future. Or, you know, D, there is a God who knows the future and he just really enjoys seeing you suffering. But if you strip away all those lies and you say, look, the truth of the matter is God is already in the future. As I'm fond of saying, he stands in the future. We are all toddlers learning to walk in eternity, but he stands in the future with his arms stretched towards us, whispering sweet words of encouragement. He's in the future already. Why should I worry about the future? This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.